I don't know. Have you ever been
Right.
through really heavy turbulence in a plane?
A couple times, yeah. I think one time for sure. And then I've had a couple landings that were like, holy cow.
Oh, yeah, we gotta hold on. It's
Yeah, I think you were with
like
me,
a
right?
roller coaster ride.
Maybe for one of them, it's like the back of the plane is like skipping or something, and you're just like, whoa,
Yeah.
that was not a smooth landing.
Yeah.
That was the by the hair of your chinny chin chin, but nothing like the Alaska
The
situation.
Alaska flight where the door flew off right after
Yes.
takeoff. But you know what?
Mid, was it right after takeoff?
I think it was about 10 minutes afterwards.
Really? I didn't know that. I figured they were like, so at that point, are they really, they're probably super high, right? Because they that phone fell.
Yeah, they were high, but they weren't above the clouds yet, I don't think.
Oh, so they probably got lucky.
Yeah, so that's one of the things is in the midst of all that happening, and you're sitting there and you have the wind blowing and the oxygen mask come down, you can think, I'm grateful this didn't happen when we were over an ocean, when we were above the clouds, above this. I'm thankful I'm not in the seat where the door blew off. There's lots of things to be thankful for in the middle of turbulence or around it.
Yes.
And then you eventually land, which we know everyone landed safely. No one was seriously injured or anything. I mean, I think there's a kid that was nearby and his shirt flew off, but that was the most of what happened. I'm
Yeah.
sure everyone landed and was they were very thankful that, we made it to the ground. We're okay.
Yeah. And let's just get into that. We had a family member who was on that airplane.
We did. We had a family member that
And
was about 5 rows up.
yeah. And yeah, that's super wild. That's all I'm gonna say about that is so wild. Just to And I think our hypothetical probably doesn't apply super well for this situation because that's a super scary, that's like life or death situation.
Oh,
That's
that
not like a little
is
bit of
for sure.
turbulence. That's like an emergency.
Yes, that's what that's probably a lot of people's biggest fears. A lot of people are afraid of flying, and that's probably their number one thing,
Yes.
the plane breaking in pieces and going down. So I'm sure a lot of people thought the plane was going to go down and they weren't going to live.
I would have. If that would have happened to me, I would have been like,
Me too.
what? Is this a movie set? Like, is this a movie?
That's what I thought so too. That's what I would think too. I would think, hold on, is this really happening? Because, those things you never think it's going to happen to you, and then it does, and you're like, holy crap, what is going on here? And then you
Yeah.
have the realization, and winds blowing everywhere. It's just, yeah, it's a crazy experience, it sounds like.
Yeah. Something totally outside of your control, but it completely blindsides you. I'm sure zero people thought that was a possibility when they got on that airplane. I mean, I would have never thought that was a possibility.
No, I would have never thought that that's going to happen to the plane that I'm on. Because it
A
hardly ever
bolt
happens.
and loose bolts. I mean, I didn't know that was a thing. Like, I didn't know that was possible.
I know, I didn't either.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess it's all mechanical and it's all put together with bolts and everything like that, but I just never thought about the fact that a bolt could get so loose during the ride that the door would fly off. And I don't know the engineering behind it. I'm sure it took multiple bolts for that door to come off. Maybe
Probably.
I'm wrong. Maybe it was just one master bolt attaching to the door came off and then the door comes off.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's tons of people that fly in airplanes, and you're so far up in the air, and it's such a safety factor that you think that the manufacturing and everything is just dialed down to where they know exactly what to do, and it's going to be perfect every time. Because
Yeah,
you
you
think
think that there
about
would
it.
be. Yeah.
Yeah, you think about it, and you're like, okay, there's so much risk here that if we don't do it perfectly, people's lives are at risk. But you go to the your local county fair and they just throw those roller coaster tilt-a-whirl rides up real quick, and you think, you know, not a very high, this is a lower risk, and you get a little nervous that, okay, there's probably some possibility they didn't screw in the bolt just perfectly because they're tearing them down and putting them up so quickly for each week. But when you get on an airplane, you expect the opposite. You think that it's going to be perfect every single time, but, you know, there's human error. You can't be perfect every time.
Well, for county fair rides, there's could be some human error, but you don't expect that for an airplane.
Exactly, because the airplane is being built one time.
Because county fair. You know, what I'm thinking is that they would have fail safes.
Yeah.
Right. It's like even if this bolt fails, you still have another bolt.
Oh, at least a few others. You know, just in case for security.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I probably missed that on the news. I'm sure somebody was talking about that somewhere, but that's what I'm thinking. This is like, how could a bolt come off and the door come off?
That, I have no idea. I think it was a couple of them.
It must have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes. Oh, absolutely. Wow. So this is the Lawyer Cliff podcast. We're here with our illustrious host, Madeline, who is ready and at the ready today to give us some hosting.
Yeah, I mean...
The hostess real? With the mostest.
The hostess with the mostest, that's me.
So, yeah, you know, I'm not going to get in your way if you want to just get it rolling.
Yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and jump into it, you know? I'm sure a lot of people, I'm curious as well, just kind of curious to kind of chat with you about how your background in law and being an entrepreneur and kind of how you got started and just some insights that you have on this. I know a lot of people are looking to start their own business. They've just graduated from law school. People are really just wondering, okay, in this new world of social media, YouTubing, entrepreneurial, how does law fit into that? And really, I guess it comes down to what inspired you to start your own law firm?
Well, thanks for the question. It's like there's so many different things, you know, that come into that are, you just, you know, your life happens, you know, and you just venture down this path. It's like the river, right? You start out and you're just like, hey, I'm going to go this way. And all of a sudden the river turns and you hit a bend in the river. And now you're over here doing this type of thing you're interested in, so funky, you know, different jobs and opportunities and people along the way. And I've just taken all those opportunities that I can, and this is where it's led me. I've always had an interest in true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an interest in athletics, and I was playing sports, and I took that route as far as I could. And then it was like, well, shoot, what am I interested in? And I was like, well, I've always been interested in true crime. So let's see what happens. You know, what kind of job is that? Oh, well, that's an attorney. And I watched some pretty compelling like documentaries around the same time, probably about, you know, what attorneys do and the investigations and all that. And I just was like, wow, the attorneys are doing a lot of the things that I think are interesting. So I don't even know what the documentaries were. I can't remember because it's so long ago. But I can remember documentaries about how, you know, these attorneys were like representing these defendants who were young, you know, juvenile offenders. And they came out that they were not, they were actually innocent. And then the actual, investigation was done by the attorneys to prove their innocence. You know, and I've watched, you know, those types of documentaries and the documentaries where, you know, you're finding the offender, the criminal, the law side of it, where, you know, they're doing this investigation to find the person who done it. And I was just always enthralled with those.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It just was so interesting to me.
Yeah, sounds like you got some interesting documentaries and shows that you were watching and thought, okay, what's the law perspective on this? And how can I figure out what's going on with this? And just kind of having a different view of it and bringing that into
it. No, this was before the whole attorney, you know, I'm talking
like
high school. Oh, I'm talking before pre-K. I always thought
What was one of your favorite shows? Do
I
you ever
love
watch Law &
CSI.
Order? Okay,
No, I
CSI.
hated Law and Order. I hated
Oh,
Law and
I
Order.
loved Law and Order. That was my favorite. But
Yes.
for very different reasons than you probably liked watching these law shows.
Yes, I hated Law and Order. I thought that was such a corny show, and I know, a lot of
That's why
females like that
I
show. Okay, a lot of females like that show. It's the equivalent of like Grey's Anatomy for law.
For law. Oh,
And
it totally is. Because I love Grey's Anatomy. And of course I loved Law and Order. Special Victims Unit, that was my favorite. I watched a lot of those episodes. Probably all of
you
them.
did? You did?
Yes. I watched a lot of them, so.
I had no idea. I'm learning something totally new about you
Yes.
and
Yep.
judging you.
You're judging me.
No, I'm not. Just kidding. It's such a popular show.
I know it is. Well, CSI is also, but CSI, I've seen a couple episodes, and it is a lot more. I don't know how to explain it, but it's not so like soap opera-y as like Grey's Anatomy or Law and Order. It's a lot more scientific and investigative, and
Yeah, it's way more nerdy.
it is nerdy. It's not so. There's not so much drama, I guess. There's drama in it. Not like that's the full point of the show.
Yeah, and I'm a nerd. I like nerd out on this stuff like crazy. I just want to like get into all of the little details about who did what and what happens where and the person piece of it, the emotional side of it. Isn't the most interesting piece for me, which is more Law and Order.
Exactly. And that's a more interesting piece for me, and I think that's why I liked it. Because I
Yes.
didn't want to be an attorney. I didn't want to go into law enforcement or anything related. I just thought it was very entertaining for other the I guess the opposite reasons. So that's probably why we like the opposite types of shows, the CSI versus Law and Order Special Victims Unit, SVU.
Yeah, totally.
I've
Totally.
watched
It's uh it,
all the time.
it it's a it's a male female thing. It truly is. And I for all the dudes out there who like Law and Order.
There are guys that like it. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I think it's awesome. I'm jealous.
I'm
Honestly, you know.
jealous too, because I'd love if you just wanted to sit down and watch SVU with me. That
I
would be
know.
fine.
I would think I totally would love that. If I could sit down with you and watch Law and Order, how much fun would that be? But it's just painful to watch a bunch, right? Obviously, to watch a couple episodes, but I
You
can't
can
binge
binge,
it.
yeah. I can binge it. I used to binge watch it.
Right. Because it's more person, like you said, it's more soap opera.
Well,
And
because it,
the CSI is more of the items. Evidence, bodies, right? Which sounds weird, but that's what they're investigating.
Or murders and things like that, where you're actually looking at all the evidence. You're looking at the everything like Law and Order. When I'd watch it, there was the prosecuting attorney in it, but you only saw her for like maybe 5 minutes of the entire episode, and each episode's like 30 minutes, so you'd see her for 5 minutes out of the entire show, and she just had a tiny little part of it, but everything else was, oh, we're gonna go talk to this person, and there's this relationship with so and so that affects this, and it's very relationship based, which creates a lot of kind of portrays that drama aspect where people that draws people in rather than the evidence or hard facts that are in more in CSI.
For sure. That's what I got to say about that. So it's you figure out what you're interested in, right? And that kind of led me like, do you have anything like in your life? I know you said that you binge watch Law and Order.
Used to,
Grey's
I
Anatomy. I know you do that. I know you binge watch Grey's
That's
Anatomy.
a long one to binge watch because I think there's 15 to 20 seasons, and I think they're still making them. There's a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but let me ask you, like, do you have anything in your life that you're like, dude, I cannot stop watching this?
Married at first sight.
That's what happened for me.
Love is blind.
No, you. That is not. That's not true, though.
What? What?
Because
else?
Because you will watch like one or two episodes, three episodes, and you're like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
I'm talking about like the whole season.
Like
you
I can
cannot
just
stop.
Watch Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, like you.
One. Yeah.
You literally wake up the next day and you're like, I gotta keep watching. I mean, I gotta figure out what happened at the end of the season because you literally binge watched the whole 90% of it the day before.
That's Grey's Anatomy. I don't know why. That's probably the number one. And it's probably because there's so many seasons that I don't have time to get into another one because there's so many seasons of this one that takes up a long time.
Yeah.
It takes a while to watch.
Did you ever think like, okay, that's my interest. Maybe I should be a nurse.
No. Because I
maybe
don't
I should be a, what is it? A surgeon? What is it? What do they do? They're surgeons and
yeah, they're surgeons.
Is it PA?
No, they're surgeons.
Who helps
they're
the surgeons though?
So there's like a doctor, like an MD, and then I think a PA, a physician's assistant, is underneath it. But I don't know. I mean, sometimes they probably do surgery. I don't know, but they don't.
Well, I mean, there's somebody. They go scalpel, and then somebody hands it to them, and then they go.
That's usually like a scrub nurse or someone. I think that's
okay,
what it is.
So yeah, nurse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about like medical? I mean, I know your mom is into the interest.
Exactly. Like growing up, my mom was very into the medical community. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be a doctor growing up. And then I just never really had that interest. I think it was just blood and the thought of taking a scalpel and cutting it. Yeah, that makes my skin crawl. I can't do that. Even as much as I like Grey's Anatomy, when a part comes up to where they're about ready to cut, do an incision, I have to look away. I don't like it. I don't like that part of it. And I think that relates back to you like CSI because you like that part of it. But the reason I like Law and Order is because they don't do the full on. I mean, this is an analogy with the scalpel. Like we don't in Law and Order, you don't see the specifics of the law. You don't see the law practice going on. You just a lot more drama, relationships, people. It's a lot more people oriented.
When you draw blood, have you ever had that done before?
Yep.
You watch it?
No, I can't watch it. I have to look away. I'm okay with needles. It's not the end of the world.
Well,
but
needles is different than drawing blood, though.
Well, drawing blood, they have to stick the needle in there. Oh,
I know, but
then the blood's coming out.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I don't like either of it. I don't like to watch my blood going out.
Because needles just hurt.
I know. I look away as the nurse is doing it, and she asks me if I'm okay. I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I just don't like to watch it. I've never passed out. There's a couple times I got a little woozy, but I just can't do it.
I'm kind of with you there. I don't, it's just like, just do your worst, you know, just get it done.
Yeah.
I don't really need to watch it.
No, I don't need to. And then you have my mom who's super in medical and she's like, oh yeah, can I just do it myself? I could do it myself. I love this stuff. Because she's also a medical assistant, so she actually draws blood. She does all that.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I kind of feel like I could do it. You know, I could do the surgeries.
You feel like you could do the surgeries with no.
Yes, because I would get used to it. I you know, at first you're like, oh my gosh, that's brutal. But I feel like after 10 surgeries, I'd be like, yeah, there's just another, you know,
that's true
intestine
that's true,
that I'm looking at or whatever.
Yeah, it's just another patient, and I've already done it a billion times. Because in the show, they make fun of like a intern or a resident. I think that's kind of the stepping stones to become an actual doctor or a surgeon. And every time someone goes in for their first surgery and they watch the whole thing, sometimes they pass out. And I think, how are they passing out? They wanted to go into this, but I think it's just a natural body response. And then after a while, you get used to it, and you just
it's not really.
Yeah. I mean, this is also maybe some movie magic going on where they just add some extra drama in there where, oh, so-and-so's passing out. I've heard of that happening, so I don't know.
I mean, that is scary, though. That's really scary.
Why?
You know, because the person you're who's working on you with a knife or whatever or a scalpel and they pass out.
Oh no, it's usually like an intern or someone that's not actually doing it. They're like, here,
Oh,
come
no, they
look over my
have.
shoulder. It's the actual surgeon doing this. Intern looks over the shoulder and sees and is like, oh, I'm out, and just falls back. So it's not the
I'm going
actual
to tell
surgeon
you.
there.
I'm going to tell you a story about my buddy who went to the doctor for a hernia.
Okay.
And the doctor says, "Hey, you want to bring in the intern? Because you know the intern's here and they want to learn how about hernias and be a good experience." And my buddy said, "Sure, bring her in. You know, bring the intern in." And he says, "Wow, this intern is my classmate from college that I'm in class with right now." And she's like really an intern, like she's in school
Just brand
with
new.
him.
Yeah, still in school.
And so the doctor says, "Okay, come on over and let me show you where this hernia is."
And then,
And
where's
she,
Narnia?
where's the hernia? Where do you think
Somewhere
the
on his
hernia,
stomach.
is there are there other places with hernias? I'm talking sports hernia.
I mean, can't you get it in like different places on your like abdomen?
I think you can get it in your abdomen, but I'm not talking abdomen. No.
Where are you
You
talking?
know, God bless you for being optimistic, but no, this is sports hernia.
I swear, okay.
I don't want to like get, you know, I don't
I
want
don't
this
think
to be a
we're gonna know the specifics
TVMA
of
here.
where the hernia was.
Yeah. So anyways, he's like, "She pushed so hard on the hernia, I've been sore for 5 days."
Oh
Yeah, because she's an intern, she doesn't know like hernias, you gotta be very like,
no.
you
Yeah, it's
know, it's
sensitive.
very sensitive.
Because isn't a hernia where the muscles kind of broken open and the intestines or some the inside of your body's kind of just poking out? That's what I
I
thought
have no
hernia.
idea. I have no
I'm
idea.
pretty
That
sure that's
sounds
what.
wrong, but
Yeah.
I just know that he was like,
Cool.
"Yeah, she just took her fingers and just shoved it up there as far as she could."
Just, oh my
That is
Lord.
the most awkward thing. Like, that's a hell of a story when you go to class and you see her.
Yeah. That must have been a very awkward next day seeing her in class.
Like, that's turbulence. Like, that's a blindside situation.
There's no preparing for that. You there's no way you can prepare.
You're no way you're thinking that this is going to be some person you're in Math 101 with or whatever the class was. You know, it's like you're thinking this is going to be some kind of like medical school person.
Yep.
Yeah. Because he's
Not
just
your
in, you know, normal community college. You know, he's not like in like a medical school.
Oh. So there's no way he would have known. It wouldn't have been as weird if he was in a medical class with her or something like that. But no, this is
Right.
just a probably general a gen ed in community college, and not a million years would you think, oh, this girl that's two rows down that I've never talked to but seen is gonna push it on
Gonna.
my hernia I've got going on here. That's
That's
super
right.
awesome.
That's right. Well, keep it going. I'm not going to stop you here.
Oh, keep it going. Okay, what else have I
Yeah, I
got? Well,
mean.
it sounds like you've kind of walked us through how what your interests are and how you sort of got into starting your own law firm and why you're interested in that. And just so with so many people wanting to start their own law firms, and there's several law firms out there, what are some ways that you kind of differentiate your law firm from others? What makes you different?
That's a good question. It's, you know, you got to figure out what kind of law firm you want to be. And there's quite a bit of possibility, you know, or is the goal to grow into Fortune 500, you know, big law type of law firm where you're just in the most prestigious of prestigious? Or are you going to go the opposite? And there's a lot of law firms that kind of fit in between there, those things where, you know, you have the solopreneur law firm, that's which is what I am, and you have to figure out what's your competitive advantage to do that, or you're going to go, hey, we're going to grow this into a large law firm. You know, maybe we got 10, 13, 15 lawyers here that are all working together and growing it. And there's pros and cons with that. Similar situation where before I even started becoming a lawyer, my own law firm, I worked for another law firm. But even before that, I worked at another law firm. And even before that, you know, I was in law school and I was trying to figure all this stuff out. And I was watching, not even watching, I was reading blogs. So I think at this point you would just like watch a YouTube video. But I was reading blogs about like what it's like to work for big law firms, what it's like to, you know, work for other people. And I'll tell you a story about my experience with some of these. I hope so. So with these bigger law firms, right? So when I was in law school, just totally wet behind the ears, don't even know, you know, up from down on law firms. And none of my family's been lawyers. None of my family friends have been lawyers. You know, I've known more people who have quit law school and dropped out by about fivefold than I know who are actual lawyers.
Oh, wow.
Personally. So I didn't know nothing. So I was doing these blogs trying to figure out what is this all about. And I hadn't worked at any law firms at this point. Potentially, maybe I'd worked at one, but maybe worked in the prosecuting attorney's office at that point. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that these blogs kind of pointed me in the right direction because they're all about, you know, your decision and whether or not you should go, which route you should do, and kind of helping you out with that. And I can remember them talking about what it's like to work at these law firms. And I was like, well, okay, I should probably meet somebody, some of these law lawyers, and figure out what it's all about. And I had a family friend who was like, hey, my friend, you know, is like this big time rainmaker for this big law firm in Portland. And I was like, cool. Okay. And he's like, would you want to meet him? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to meet him. And he's like, great. Well, we'll just schedule a time for you to, you know, just go in and drop by and have a conversation with him and meet the guy. So I was like, great. This is exactly the opportunities, you know, that I was kind of looking to do. Mm-hmm. So I go to this guy's office and he is like 100 years old. I mean, he is literally not even practicing. It doesn't seem like. I don't even know how he could. Just, you know, could not hear really at all. And super awesome guy, just really, really nice guy, super welcoming, warming. And he's just going through, he's telling me all of these crazy big cases that he's taken on where he sued the railroad, he sued the airline company, he sued the businesses and all of these, you know, tobacco and all of these things that he made all these great verdicts on. And I'm just like listening and it was a great conversation. He was awesome. And he was clearly like the rainmaker, which I don't know if that the terminology is, you know, everybody knows that, but it's kind of like you're the guy that kind of brings in the business, that kind of is the well-known member and really who's kind of more of a figurehead, you know, very well respected in the community, mm-hmm. versus the lawyers who are, you know, working for you. And he had a bunch of lawyers who were working for him. And so I get done talking to the guy. And he goes, hey, we're going to go and walk you down to the hiring manager and you can talk to him and, you know, you can give him your information. We'll see if we can, you know, have a spot for you as, you know, as an intern.
Well, it sounds like, they sent you down to the hiring manager. You didn't know, right?
Like this sounds like a great situation, right?
Yeah. You're like, sweet.
I had no intention of working there. I had no intention. I was literally just like brand new, just wanting to meet people. Uh-huh. And he's like, shoot, man. So I'm like thinking, shit, maybe I will work my way right into a job here. You know, yeah. Maybe I won't have to do any applications for internships. Maybe I just got one right here. Uh-huh. And I was, you know, a little foreshadowing. That's not how it turned out. So I go down to the hiring manager and you know, he looks like he's kind of busy or whatever, and he's like kind of, you know, probably kind of got pushed into taking me on right in the middle of probably when he was doing something. But the you know, the old guy, he probably didn't give a shit, you know. He's just like, hey, I did my thing, now somebody else can, you know, take the baton here. And so this guy sits me down and he goes, you know, hey, well, do you got your resume? You know, and I'm like, no, but I can probably tell you some of the things, you know, on top of my head. And then he starts asking me these questions, and I'm like, you know me, I'm not like great with dates, or I'm pretty optimistic sometimes. So I'm like telling him the years that I think are I went to these schools and all that, and trying to like memorize my resume off the top of my head.
Yeah, he wants all the resume specifics.
Yeah, because he thinks that I'm here for an internship. Like I'm here to apply.
He
And
doesn't know that you just came in with the intention just to do some networking conversation. Oh my God.
no. And so I'm going from this great conversation with this old guy to this, you know, young, you know, guy who's probably in his 50s, you know, and I'm 26 or whatever. And the 50-year-old guy is looking at me like, are you shitting me? Like, how am I supposed to do anything with this? Because you don't know nothing about anything and you didn't even bring your resume. So, learning tip for everybody out there, just have your resume ready to go. You know, 2024 now, if I was a student, I'd have my resume on my phone. I'd be like, here, I can email it to you right now. But this is 2017 or 16 or 50. See, I don't even know. You know, I'm in the same position now as I was then, trying to like figure out dates right off the top of my head. And I never got a call back from those people. They were like, not gonna happen. You know, the hiring manager, and he straight up told me, he's like, yeah, we don't have no spots. You know, the old guy's, you know, trying to, you know, he's letting you know, like, it's this is a nice thing, but we're already kind of, he already knew all the interns, and it was my first year of law school. I'm pretty sure. So typically you don't get an internship your first year
When
of
do
law
you
school.
get an internship?
Your second, third year, because it's competitive. You know, you're competing against second and third year people. So if you get an internship that first year, they really liked you.
Oh, I see. Because they usually
And you
want
know,
someone
and
that has been doing it for at least a year, kind of understands a little bit more terminology, can actually work with them a little bit than just some newbie right out of undergrad.
yeah, there's a huge amount of growth between your first year and your second year of law school.
It sounds like it. Sounds like there's
It
probably.
this truly is because you went into something that was totally brand new. You know, it's kind of like you picked up golf and you're like you practice golf your first year. There's a huge difference between golf 1 year versus your second year. When you those first couple months, 4 or 5 months, you are freaking horrible at golf.
Yeah. You're
I still
terrible.
am. I mean, I played
Or
I
law.
played many months, and I still it's really hard. It's a hard game. But law school's it's a super 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 hard game.
Yeah, sounds like it. Did you learn like did you do you think you learned the most within the first year, like versus
That's a
this?
good question.
I guess because when you're thrown into it, you're kind of just thrown to the wolves, so you kind of have to stumble through and you get used to things, you learn things, and the second and third year just keep building on top of that,
I
probably.
think the learning curve is so steep that it probably feels like you're learning the most, but it's exponential
I see.
to where you are learning all this knowledge, this base of knowledge, but you don't really see the benefits until the end. To
Oh,
where
okay.
at the end of it, you're going like, oh shit, I have a general understanding of all this stuff now. But at the beginning, you're like, I'm learning this, and I'm learning this, and I'm learning that, and nothing is like connecting.
Oh, because you're just so in the weeds learning all the small little things. And then it sounds like at the end you kind of put it together and realize, holy shit, I've learned a lot. I've read a lot of textbooks.
Yeah, well, by the end, you're going, oh, negligence law relates to criminal, you know, negligence standards. And then you're like going, well, constitutional law relates to oil rights or whatever it is, you know, it all starts to go like, oh, okay, there's some patterns here. And you don't have to start from scratch every single time.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
I think is by the end of it, your skills have been sharpened. So that's once your skills have been sharpened, you can really start flourishing.
That makes sense. So it sounds like you didn't get the first internship that you technically didn't apply for, but you gave your resume information to. Did you have, what did you do after that? What was kind of your progression as an intern job up until where you are now?
So I had jobs after that. So I didn't get that one. At some point, I did a bunch of applying and I did all of these applications for internships. And I was like, damn, didn't get any of them. And I was like, this was really tough for me because I was like, wow, I've been working really hard. You know, I've been working on my GPA, I've been working on my classes. And they were just like, for whatever, they always had like an excuse, which was always a good excuse. You know, it was like, you live too far away. I applied for one internship. It was like an hour away from my house. And they're like, you know, you got to be at this office every day. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I'll do it for you. In Oregon, it was like an hour away somewhere in Oregon that was like past Portland. And they're like, dude, this is going to be a far journey for you. And then I was like, I don't care. I'll do anything. I'll get an internship. They'll be like, you know, so it was part of this program where they were like accepting everybody to apply. And some of them were just like, hey, we already got the person.
Oh, so then why like, were they oh. patients?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they were just like giving us experience.
Oh, like interview experience to help with the next one.
Yeah. But I was like, damn, I don't give a shit about experience. Why am I doing this? You know, it's like, you know, if you already have the person who you know is going to do it, then, you know, I wish you would have told me because I'm taking this very hard,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then I, for whatever reason, I got denied on all those applications. I think there was five that like everybody at the school applied for and everybody got an application, got to do it for practice. Which was nice, but it was frustrating for me. And so you did
five different interviews. You did five interviews when they knew they were going to take someone.
Pretty much where it was like so many people applied and you just got a slot. And, you know, I was like, I was anticipating getting picked. I was not anticipating going over. Because I had really good GPA, I had really good grades, and you know, I worked really hard. So I figured, hey, this is it. You know, they're just gonna go like, well, criteria. You know, and I knew that some of them were gonna be like, hey, you know, they know somebody who knows somebody, gonna give them good, you know, what's that called, a reference?
Oh, reference. Yeah.
And I was gonna get beaten out by that or the family friend or whatever, mm-hmm. and I knew that was gonna happen. I was not expecting it to happen five times, so.
Yeah.
That was a real bummer. But then I just, for whatever reason, I saw more and I was like, I guess I'm very stubborn. So I just kept applying to places. And then I applied to the prosecuting attorney's office. And I was like, well, my confidence was low. I was not expecting to get it because this is the prosecuting attorney's office. You know, this is like the biggest law firm in the whole state.
Yeah.
So walked in there and they literally offered me the job in the interview. They're like, when can you start? Wow. Yeah. And I was like, oh shoot. anytime. And then they're like, well, you get paid. I think at that time it was like 15 bucks an hour.
Uh-huh.
And I was like,
long ago.
Yeah. And I was like, you're kidding.
Okay.
No, because I had just applied for five internships where I was not going to get paid, and I got denied on all of them.
Oh, wow. And so now...
So I was like, and I'm like, you know, a law student who's like, any type of payment is like, you know, unbelievable because, mm-hmm. yeah. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is awesome. I'm totally on board. And, you know, that was my first job. And then after that, you know, I did that for a while. That was a very challenging job. Just because working for the prosecuting attorney is very demanding. You know, it's very like a lot of cases, a lot of difficult cases, difficult defendants that you work with, difficult experiences. You know, everywhere is everybody's really doing that job. You know, as a public servant, you know, as you know, so it's definitely like that. And so I got done with that job, did that for a quarter or two, and just really thought that was just one of the best experiences ever, you know, and because it was probably because it was challenging, and I felt very rewarded by that job. And I worked with awesome people, and I had awesome bosses. So the assistant prosecuting attorney, which was my boss, who was like one under the prosecuting attorney. And I keep saying prosecuting attorney, it's district attorney, but I, you know, just to throw that out there if somebody is confused. So yes,
Is
the
there a
district
difference
attorney,
district in prosecuting?
there's no difference, but some places they call them prosecuting attorney, some places they call them district attorney.
Oh.
So it's different from where Washington and Oregon. So
Okay.
that's what people are, you know, just to clarify that. If somebody is out there thinking that, and I like to appeal to the one person in the interview who's listening who might have that question.
That's good.
But let's not get off track. I'm thinking that we were going somewhere with that.
Oh, we were talking about your kind of your path. So you worked for the district attorney, and then it sounded like you only did it for two quarters. Why was it only 2 quarters?
Yeah, let me jump back in there. Oh, because it was an intern type of situation.
Oh, I see. So it
So
was a limit.
you're not working there permanently, and you could, but you know, we're all students who work there, you know, for the most part. Like, they were the district attorneys that were our supervisors, and then everybody who's working on the cases and actually appearing in court in that unit was a student. The supervising attorneys were making sure that, you know, we knew what we were doing, and that we were doing the job correctly. But yeah, it was just a really great experience, I think, is where I was going with that. And so that got done with that, and had another internship at another per at a personal injury law firm, and that was a really, you know, interesting, wild experience. You know, that's it was kind of a big time thing. And, you know, I actually didn't get that job. I applied for it, and they're like, "Hey, we already have somebody."
Oh, so you
And
did get it.
I didn't get it at first, but then the person who was the owner of the law firm who was doing the interview, he asked me during the interview if I could do social media, if I knew anything about social media.
Oh.
And you know me, I've got no experience doing that. But I said yes because I have a Facebook account, you know, I know what I do.
Yeah, so technically it sounds like you did have some social media experience.
Sure, as much as anybody, but you
Yeah.
know, I was sure that I could figure my way through it. And at that point in time, they were having some issues with social media, and they knew that that was a part of it, and so they wanted to bring me on board as somebody, as like a liaison, essentially, for whatever they needed. You know, as on to just come in and do projects with whatever it was. Like, I think one of the first projects that I did was working, like, they had two LinkedIn accounts, and they wanted to only have one, and they couldn't figure out how to delete the one and get everything transferred over to the other one. And
Oh.
I said, "I don't know how to do that, but I will figure it out," you know, and that's what we did. And it was a process. You know, I can remember I had to send in their identification to LinkedIn to get it closed because they didn't have the passwords, and it was a whole thing. And I was like, okay, well, maybe there's something to this, where I could assist them. They want help with this. And it kind of morphed into something totally different by the end of it. I think they realized that I was more valuable for the actual legal side of it than the social media, because they ended up giving me a bunch of research projects for cases that they had going on, and I got somewhat involved in kind of the back end, kind of the academic side of some of these cases, which they had very interesting and difficult cases going. And I'm sure that that's all the cases that they really do is kind of these, you know, kind of massive injury, kind of novel sometimes cases. And that's really what it turned into. And I got really, really great experience doing that. I just thought that was like kind of a shocking thing. You know, you don't expect to, you get signed up for social media and you get kind of in the weeds with all of these kind of prominent, serious attorneys.
Uh-huh.
That are doing kind of the pinnacle of the work that most people would want to do as attorneys.
Yeah, it's starting out in social media when you're looking for an internship that's related to what you're getting your degree in. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you started out like that and then it changed into something that was actually helpful, where you're actually doing legal research and really doing what your intention mm-hmm. was when you applied for it.
Yes, and I ended up working pretty closely with the person that they hired for that position as an intern assistant.
Oh, so
and
it ended up being
she and well, not no, because we ended up having totally different jobs. But you know, I was happy with how it all happened. But she was super nice, and we ended up becoming good friends. It just so happened during that process. And, you know, it was just kind of funny because it was like, you know, hey, I applied for your job. <You know? Yeah. laughs> And now we're both working here. Yeah. Now we're both working here. And,
funny.
You know, her job was, yeah, her, they ended up treating me very different because I was a law student and she had experience with as a legal assistant type of position. I had none of that experience.
Oh, gotcha.
So they ended up, I think, figuring out what was the most valuable for both of us. And we ended up, I think, you know, it ended up being very beneficial for both of us and worked out very well. So I was very, very fortunate to have that job, and it was very, very interesting.
So how are your jobs different?
Her job was more involved in the preparation of the legal work. My job was more theoretical, academic, where it was more of a, they were thinking, I've got this question about this case that I really don't have the attention to do, but we need to figure it out. You know, I don't have the availability because I've got all these other cases. Let's flip it to Cliff and see if he comes up with something. And I thought that was a great job. I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
Versus let's put together a trial binder, you know, here are the exhibits and let's get them all in order. That would be the other side of that coin. You know, that would be something that I signed up for, but I didn't end up actually doing, which is, you know, for me, also very much a good job, because you're very involved in these cases. I mean, that's great experience to put together a trial binder as an intern. How much better can it get? You know, you are literally flipping through an attorney that's been doing this for 30 years and their work. And yeah, how they put together the case.
No, it sounds like great experience. So at what mm-hmm. point did you know you wanted to start your own law firm?
When I was in law school reading those blogs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was like, you can work for somebody, and working for somebody is just like anywhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's like every other job. You're always working for someone.
Yeah, if you're working for someone, well, I mean, it goes with some of the same benefits, the same pros and cons there as far as when you work for somebody else, you're doing a lot of the work and not getting a lot of the experience. You're not getting a lot of the reputational, the goodwill that's associated with that is going to somebody else typically.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to decide, is that where you want to do? Are you okay with being, you know, more in a stable situation where somebody is in more control over your fate versus, mm-hmm. you have more leverage throughout your career if you work on yourself, if you work on your career or I guess, you know, your book of business,
mm-hmm.
if you hang your own shingle. Then that's what they say.
Hang your shingle.
Yeah, have you heard that?
I've never heard that.
I know you've watched Suits. You know, I'm sure
hang your shingle.
If you heard them say that in that show, that's What were we watching? We were watching something like just the other day. Oh, Reacher. You remember
Did they
Reacher?
say that?
Yes.
Oh, I missed it. I didn't hear that.
She, because he.
That would be something he would say.
Well, So they got all the money at the end of the show, and they're like, well, what are you going to do with it? And they gave all the money to Reacher because they knew he would be fair with it. And one of it was one of the women, his love interest in the show. I don't know if you remember her,
It's
but she was
okay.
an attorney. I thought you would. So she was an attorney, and with the earnings, he opened a LLC for her in Delaware, which is kind of all cliche stuff, but for her to hang her own shingle, which means
Oh,
open her own law firm because she was working for somebody else. And that's
I
a
see.
good, that's a pretty good answer to your question. It's like, well, the dream. He said she's too smart to be working for anybody else. It's a situation where she does not, her personality or whatever it is, her effort that she's put into it is not going to shine. Isn't not going to come through if she works for somebody else. She got to start her own law firm.
I see. So how do you know if you are the right, if it's right for you to start your own law firm?
You never know. You just have to do it. You give it a try. If it works, don't be afraid for it to work because it really might work. If you're the type of person that is a real go-getter and doesn't take no for an answer because there's going to be a million things that go wrong and you're just going to have to keep on working and trying your best, every day, just show up and give it your all. And if it doesn't work out, go work for somebody else. That's all you can do.
That's the fallback, working for someone else. Because I know what's kind of the mindset that you have to have as an entrepreneur. Because I know we've talked about that a lot within the past days, and just what type of mindset do you need to be in? What's your mind frame? Because the day-to-day stuff is just so different. You're an entrepreneur, you're doing so many different things, you're wearing so many different hats. How do you keep going? What's the mindset that you have?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. You're wearing different hats. So you've got a different mindset for accounting, you got a different mindset for marketing, you got a different mindset for your legal work, and you've got to wear all these different hats and be comfortable with it. And I think that's probably where people run into issues is they are not comfortable wearing different hats. They want to wear one hat. I am the owner of the law firm and I get to make all the decisions, right, for everybody. When really, you probably are not very good at accounting. You're probably not very good at marketing. And so you to be humble and to figure out what that means, because somebody out there is good at it. Do you need to go figure out what they know about it? Or are you just gonna assume that you're good at it because you're good at everything? Because you're good at being a lawyer. I think probably most law firms don't fail on the legal work. It's this umbrella of having to be good at everything that you do. And you're not capable. You have to have people help you. You have to bring people on because you're not cranking out widgets. You can't just, give a royalty to a factory. It's not how it works. You are literally in the weeds. There's so much ups and downs with it. Every case being so unique, every person that you work with being super interesting and unique, that it takes a village to get it done. It really, really does. So that's something you learn along the way. And next question. I don't even know if that answered your question or not.
No, I think you
Okay.
did. Because you mentioned wearing multiple different hats and just you're not going to be comfortable with things. So being uncomfortable, I think, is something you need to get comfortable with. But being
Exactly.
running your own law firm, there's this, everyone nowadays is talking about work-life balance. You need to work and then you need a break and you need to have your life. So kind of elaborate, because we've talked about work-life balance versus a work-life circle, and how does that work?
Oh yeah, so Jeff Bezos just we listened to this interview with him, and he's talking about this balance, like the scales of justice. It's like, well, do I push down my thumb on the scale of family, or do I push down my thumb on the scale of business and work? And how do I balance those perfectly? And I think that a lot of people with that mindset could benefit from watching that interview with Jeff Bezos, because it's not how I view my life. And I never put it into this terminology before, but I heard that interview and I was like, damn, that's exactly how it is. You know, if you're passionate and you're just all on board with your family and your personal life, and you're just so present for them, you know, during those periods of time, you can then take that, shut that down, and go to the other end of the circle and do the same thing with your business. And I think that's where people maybe have a gap there. I think, you know, maybe I have had that gap myself, where it's like, no, I got to focus so much on business, right? And if I focus on my personal life at all, then I'm screwing up. I'm missing out. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs fall in that trap where it's like, no, you don't understand. You've got to have hobbies. You got to have passions in your mm-hmm. life. And I'll give you an example of this. Okay. When I was doing the bar exam, I read The Hobbit.
The Hobbit, the entire book.
The entire book. The entire book when I was studying for the bar exam. And I was like, dude, I gotta do this. It's so, and I was enjoying it. I was like, I hate reading these cases. I've been reading cases for 3 years about people getting their arms ripped off by wash machines, people, you know, backhoe accidents, tobacco companies. Okay. Killing people. I was just done. I'm done hearing about all these horrible situations. Cause that's the thing about a legal case. There's usually not a happy ending. And, yeah. You know, the ending is payment, you know, mm-hmm. some kind of a
financial compensation.
Yeah, some kind of, exactly, compensation. I think mm-hmm. the word is, I can't think of the word right now. It's not retribution, but it's you know, you essentially got to figure out what the proper compensation is, like you said, yeah. for whatever the injury is. In a lot of cases, those are cases like that, where, I mean, it's not very fun for your arm to get ripped off and get $1 million. You know, but that's the question the jury's got to do. You know, that's not like a good, happy, like, we're not watching an Adam Sandler movie.
No, there's no happy.
For any of these cases.
Yeah.
You know, a woman has coffee fall in her lap, and, you know, and the question is, well, should she get paid out or not? And you're going through this analysis, and it's like, well, you know, should she have been more careful? Yeah. Should she have gotten absolutely scorched third degree burns over her entire lap because she's an old lady and she can't, you know, get the coffee off in time? Mm-hmm. No, you know, turn the damn coffee temperature down, you know, and how do we get McDonald's to do that? Or, you know, that was one of the cases that we looked at, you know, just cases like that, where, you know, it's like, okay, well, in order to get McDonald's to do that, they have to pay out a certain amount of money to, you know, deter. And, every case is like that. So I'm like, you know, let's learn about Frodo. You know, let's go into the world of the hobbits and, you know, venture into this rabbit hole, you know, with where they're trying to escape the, you know, through Middle Earth and Sauron and evade capture from Sauron and destroy the ring.
Just completely different than any case law you're reading.
Yes. And you know, every story, you know, that the ending is going to do that. You know, there's a promise from the writer that the ending is going to be a happy one and that everything's mm-hmm. going to work out.
Well, no one would read it. It would be such a good book or a movie if it didn't have a good...
They'd say, I want my money back.
Yeah.
Because you promised me that, you know, you told me this whole story that
yep.
you were going to take care of my characters. Except for, like, you know, there's some other stories that's they kind of push the limits on that, where Game of Thrones, you know, it's like, no, we're going to kill all the characters.
They're like, yeah. We're doing the opposite. Everyone's dying right away. And then mm-hmm. I guess that's a completely different situation. Then that kind of hooks you on, like, okay, we weren't super attached to the characters because it was only the first couple episodes. What are they going to do next? So it kind of intrigues you to keep watching
yes.
see what happens.
But at the end, you still have a situation where the Ice King is destroyed and everything goes back into a better new world order at the end of it. You know, it's a success.
Well, I didn't,
you know,
I
didn't
spoil it for me.
Well, transformation, but you don't, I spoiled it, but I think if I, you would have probably assumed that if you're watching it throughout the process.
Exactly.
And maybe you wouldn't, but you know,
yeah,
maybe you wouldn't.
You may not predict exactly what the ending is going to be, but you know there's a storyline and it's going to end with an mm-hmm. accomplishment. The main character did something good or something. It's a good ending. It's not horrible where nothing was achieved.
Yeah, there's got to be a transformation.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no transformation, if it's, you know, hey, we started off, Middle Earth was ruled by Sauron and is evil, and at the end of it, we're still there. There's going to be an issue there. The reader's going to go, what's going on here?
What was the point of this? Basically,
that's what I'm wondering. I can't even remember where we were, what we were talking about. I got so into, The Hobbit. Yeah. So guys,
how it brings you to the next.
Yeah. So I was so involved in that I was like, I got to read The Hobbit. And, you know, it was an everyday thing. Every night I would, you know, study guides in my books and my practice tests. And I would just study for an hour. And after that, I would read my book for an hour and then I'd go to bed, you know, and I would do that every night. And it's like, well, dude, you are reading like all day long. You know, we're having to read all these cases. You're reading all day long. How come you go just continue to do that? Why would you pick a book? Why wouldn't you play video games or whatever? And it doesn't matter. I could have played video games, but I just preferred to read a book, you know, at that point in my life. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's really the thing people miss is they got to figure out, you know, what's the work life balance. You know, obviously mm-hmm. reading The Hobbit is not work, right?
No,
but reading The Hobbit every night kept me sane so I could finish the circle and do well with the work and then continue the circle and, you know, dive into that fantasy world. And it just kept going and going and going. And I think that got me through, you know, a lot of things helped, but I know that for a fact that work-life circle helped during the bar.
It probably got you through because it prevented some burnout. Burnout happens when you're doing the same thing over and over and over and you have really no break. Mm-hmm. And so having that hour of break to where your brain gets to go on this little fun adventure and think about something that's so unwork-related and just very enjoyable prevents burnout. Mm-hmm. It kind of re-energizes you to get ready to get back to work the next day.
Mm-hmm. And I think what reminded me of this is I just started The Hobbit on Spotify. It's an audiobook on Spotify. Not The Hobbit, The Fellowship of the Ring. So the Lord of the Rings was in my head. But I just started that today. And I'm so super excited to listen to that.
There we go. Hour every night. You can listen to it.
Or whatever, you know. Could be an hour every month, but you gotta, you know, your personal life is critically important for your work. You know, if you really want to be the best at something, I guess, you know, if you look at like professional sports, professional athletes, the people who are just obsessed with the sport usually do not do as well as the people who are treating it like, you know, a rec league softball game. And I know it's like the passion is there and everybody wants to win, but if it's not the championship game of the World Series or the NBA Finals, these guys are having fun. You know, these guys are enjoying their sport and the you know, females too. You know, same thing. It's like if you are out there and you are just so focused on winning and everything's about winning, you know, you are like living, breathing your sport and you're not having any personal life because it's all about training. And, you know, there's like, you know, you see athletes like Kobe Bryant and, you know, these guys who are just like, they're animals, you know, they literally are just 24/7 thinking about being the champion. You know, there's a couple guys like that are just unbelievable, but a lot of these guys, man, you'd be shocked. Like they are literally not trying like everybody thinks they are. It's just, they are just gifted and, you know, they are not keeping their diet tight. They're out there eating McDonald's, you know, they're eating candy at halftime, you know, drinking with the boys after the game, You know, I'm privy to this because a lot of the great athletes that I played with, I was just like, you guys are, how can you do it? Well, they had more of this work-life balance. You know, they are finishing the circle. They are really partying hard, and having great times, especially the football guys, man. I've had some, went to school with some football guys, man. They were raging, you know, they knew how to have a good time. And then on the, when it came to football, they did the same thing. They did the
Yeah, I
same
feel like
thing. They were just crushing it, you know, and it was this circle where everything in their life was full bore and, you know, poured it on hot. So
so when they are
that's
in it,
my.
when they are, it sounds like when they are in the work, they're really fully in the work, and then when they're in life, they're really fully in life. And I feel like that kind of brings us back to the beginning of when we started talking about we're floating down the river. You can only do so much to prepare for those rapids or the turbulence going on. You kind of just have to enjoy where you're at, enjoy when the stream is nice and smooth, and when it's going through turbulence, you're going to get through it and you're just going to figure it out. But
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
in order to keep feeding into the work, you got to enjoy little bits of life here and there too. It's kind of like a 24-hour circle. Within every 24 hours, you've got to have that work-life circle going on. It can't be this, oh, Monday through Friday is just going to be hell, and then I just am waiting for the weekend so I can do this and that. It's no, you gotta enjoy your life every day. You gotta wake up and have some gratitude and just be thankful. Hey, you know, it's not my favorite job, but I'm just grateful I have a job. I like this part of it. I like this part of it, and then I get to do this for myself during the day. Maybe it's cooking dinner for yourself, spending time making a little extra special dinner, or reading your favorite book. Reading The Hobbit before bed, things like that. So it's really just a full circle.
I love it. Yep. Thanks for tying it back in. Thanks for, you know, leaving us that wisdom right there. You know, it really, you know, I'm going to take that away and think about that when you're driving, when you're going down the river. You know, how does work, where, how does the work, life circle play into that? And I like the way that you put that. So if you want to hear more, from us and our podcast, you know, follow and click the video right here and we'll get you more with True Crime with Lawyer Cliff. Thanks for watching.